Okay, Chevra, ladies and gentlemen, let's begin. Tonight's class is supposed to be beginning Melachim 2, the second book of Kings. There's only one problem, and that problem is that there's no such thing as the second book of Kings. There's only one book of Kings. There is no two books of Kings. Now, it happens that beginning way back when... the Septuagint and the Vulgate decided to break the book of Malachim into two parts. And the reason why they did this is simply because it's a big book. And big books, you don't like to carry around because it's like a heavy tome. So in order to solve that problem, what they did is they broke the book of Malachim into two parts. And that makes a lot of sense, that's understandable, but we know that obviously there are 24 books of Tanakh, and there's only one Samuel, there's only one Malachim, that we know, although all the Torah guys always tell the joke about how when you visit Israel, they show you, oh, and here's the grave of Samuel, and there's the grave of Samuel, and you ask, like, what's going on, and say, is that Samuel 1, that's Samuel 2. But of course, it's not true, there's only one Samuel, there's only one book of Malachim, end of discussion there. Now, the book was divided up into two parts, like we mentioned, by the Septuagint and the Vulgate. Jews subsequently began to follow this breakdown, beginning in Bibles that were printed in 1514. Even Jewish Bibles already had the Kings 1 and Kings 2. The reason why we did that is because, practically speaking, you want to be on the same page as others. In other words, if you're a Jew and you are in a dispute, let's say, with a non-Jew, you need some way of referencing. Oh, what about chapter X verse X? Well, if I have different chapters and verses than you have, it's going to become one of these conversations where we ain't communicating. So
they're talking over each other.
What?
They're talking over each other.
They're talking over, and they're not talking to each other, however you want to phrase it. So to solve that problem, right, as a practical matter, Jews began to use a distinction between Kings 1 and Kings 2, and they began to use the chapters. Chapters are not authentically Jewish. There's an authentic Jewish way of breaking Tanakh down into Siddarim. If you look in the new Tanakhs, they often have those that come out. Korim has some, according to Siddarim, others. They are broken down into Siddarim. That breakdown into Siddarim is the authentic Jewish breakdown. We happen to have adopted the non-Jewish breakdown as a matter of convenience. But it's not the authentic breakdown. Okay? So there's only one Kings, and there's only, and chapters are not authentic. For this reason, by the way, when I was a kid and we learned Tanakh for the first time in elementary school, so they told us that you shouldn't speak about prakim in Tanakh, because a perek is a legitimate Hebrew word. Rather, you should speak about kapitlach. A kapitel is a Yiddishized, what? It's a Yiddishized term for chapter. Why are we doing it that way? Because, they quote from Rabbi Yankiv Kamenetsky and others, we're doing it that way to show that this breakdown is not the official, legitimate Jewish breakdown. This is something else. So far, so good?
You can still see traces of that if you look in a King James Bible or whatever. And occasionally, the verse numbers on the
Tehillim
are a little bit different.
Right. I mean, again, Tehillim happens to have a slightly different breakdown than other things, etc. Now, if you are going to break the book of Kings into two parts, because you don't want to carry such a heavy book like we mentioned, where do you make the break? So, there are a few possible options, none of which was accepted by the Septuagint and the Vulgate. One option that I would think would make sense is that I should break after what we call Kings 2, Chapter 2, which is after Elijah the prophet rises up to the heaven. Because at that point, right, not Elijah Muhammad, but at that point, right, when Elijah rises to heaven, that's a different type of thing. Right? Eliyahu goes up to Shamayim, that's a huge change. That's when I might pause the Sefer. Alternatively, maybe I would break the Sefer, let's say, after I break the Sefer maybe after the death of Achav, right? We had last week that Achav dies in a war against Aram, and that would be a good place to break the Sefer, because Achav is this major figure. It's around the halfway point, so it makes sense that that's when I would pause. For some reason, the break is not after the death of Achav, not after the death of Eliyahu. The break is in the middle of the reign of Ahaziah, the son of Achav. And this is really, really weird. Because Ahaziah, the son of Achav, is a pretty insignificant king. Right? What did he do? He died. Right? Basically, that's what he did. He didn't do diddly squat, right? We'll see. Or at least diddly squat, nothing good, right? Ahaziah, the son of Achav, dies. Right? We'll talk about that. And for some reason, and I give you the first three psukim here, which are the last psukim in Kings 1, are the psukim about Achav, and it goes into King Ahaziah, excuse me, and it goes into who Ahaziah is at the beginning of Kings 2. So effectively, here, Kings 1, chapter 22, verse 52, 53, 54, says, Ahaziah, the son of Achav, is a king on Yisrael in Shomron. He ruled for 17 years. Excuse me, in the 17th year of Yehoshaphat, he becomes king, and he rules for 2 years. And Ahaziah does bad, and he follows the path of both his father and his mother. His father is Achav, his mother is Izebel. He does bad, right? He follows the path of Yeravam. He worships Baal. He gets God angry, etc. Right? That is the beginning of Ahaziah, and then the story continues that Moab, right here, verse 1 in chapter 1, by Yifsha Moab be Yisrael Achare Mos Achav, that Moab rebels, and then, right, verse 2, Ahaziah falls, etc., through the lattice. We'll talk about that. He gets sick, etc., and he reaches out to Baal Zebub, the god of Ekron, right, to find out if he's going to live. So now, what we really have is an interruption in the middle of Ahaziah, right? We have the first three verses of Ahaziah's in Kings 1, the rest of Ahaziah's in Kings 2. Why do we make this separation? It's unclear. And in fact, if you're looking, you know, the Da'at Mikra Tanakh, you know, the pink books, They do not make the break over here. They make the break after Achav dies, back in chapter 22 of Kings 1, verse 50, whatever. That's when they make the break. That makes a certain amount of sense. Breaking it over here makes no sense. Now, the footnote, however, in the Da'at Mikra Tanakh has the following suggestion, which is intriguing. How does the book of Kings 1 begin? Does anyone remember? It goes back a while. Like, we've been doing this for, I don't know, 6-8 months. David, right? Very good, right? David, right, gets sick, right? And David needs someone to warm him up. So they hire Avishag HaShunamit, right? Remember that episode?
Yep.
Right? So it begins with the illness of a king. Kings 2 begins not with the beginning of Ahaziah, but with the illness of Ahaziah. That Ahaziah who falls through the lattice that we'll talk about in a minute, and he gets sick, right? So perhaps there's a certain, again, I'm not like a literature guy, but perhaps there's a certain literary parallelism that we want to establish that both books of Kings begin with a sick king. Why would I do that? I don't know. But at least there's some meaning behind the madness, as Shakespeare would say. Yeah? So far, so good? Okay. Now, the reign of Ahaziahu is a low point. Right? You know there's a song, I think from Pete Seeger, he was worse than Louis the 13th. He was worse than Louis the 14th. He was the worst since Louis the 1st. Right? In other words, that you can be a king who's worse than your predecessor. And you would think that it's hard to be worse than Achav, no? But his son Ahaziahu actually pulls this trick off. Right? Achaziyahu is worse than Louis I. He's worse than King Ahav. Now, in which ways is he worse than Ahav? So, what was good about Ahav? We had a few things. First of all, the government is pretty stable, right? The country is prosperous. Because I'll say it's because they didn't speak Lashon Hara against each other. But whatever it is, the people are prosperous, they're stable. They are actually a nation who rules many other nations, right? Until the very end, when Ahab is killed in a war against Aram, they win all their wars. And most nations of the world, now when I speak about the world, I mean the world that immediately surrounded them, they are paying tribute to Ahab while Ahab is king. So effectively, Ahab is a powerful ruler. Right, let's go, verse 1. What do we see? Vayivshah Moab b'Yisrael acharei Mod Achav. Moab, what's Vayivshah? English translation, Moab rebels. Okay, so now what we have is, on the political front, there is a decrease, right? It's worse. Now, the rebellion over here probably means that they stop paying taxes. That's usually how rebellions go, no? They stop paying taxes. Mm-hmm. So, effectively, Ahav, who's this powerful ruler, now his son Ahaziyahu is king, and things ain't so hunky-dory. Now, the next thing that we know is Ahaziyahu falls through the lattice work. Apparently, he's up on the second floor, and there was like a lattice work in the floor slash ceiling to allow some light to go through. It was decorative, maybe. I don't know. He fell through it, and he got sick. No? He hurt himself. He gets sick, and he sends Vayishlach Malachim. He sends messengers, and he tells them, L'chu dirshu b'ba'al zvul v'rohei ekron im ahyeh mechol izeh. Go and inquire from Ba'al Zavuv, the god of Ekron, whether I will survive this illness. Now, this is a low point. Why is this a low point?
Who's he asking?
He's asking Ba'al Zavuv.
Exactly.
So Ba'al Zavuv means
Lord of the
flies. Now, by the way, if you are a Ba'al, that means a master, a ruler, so you should rule over something that's something. If you are the ruler of the flies, that ain't very much, right? Point two, who was the traditional god of the Jews in Shomron, of the Jews in the kingdom of Israel? The traditional god is just Baal. Baal is the master of everything. Baal Zavuv is, right, a decrease.
And it's even more like degrading when you think of a swarm of flies, you think of them swarming around whatever.
Now, why would you ask Ba'al Zavuv? Right? Who is Ba'al Zavuv? So first of all, the Malbim has a comment. Here, turn to the second side of the sheet. First of all, he says that Ahaziyahu falls down where he should have fallen down. It's like he falls down in his own bedroom. It's like a freak accident. And he gets sick. And nonetheless, he doesn't do tshuva. And he decides to ask Ba'al Zavuv, why? He's choosing new gods because Ba'al didn't answer him already. Now, Ahav, his father, Izebel, his mother, worship Baal, Asherah. He's going to something new because he wasn't answered. Then the Malbim adds, interestingly, the Gamki Hazavuv Simon Hamavas, the Komre Ba'azvuv Hayuminab Emi Yechiyami Yamos. Flies hang around dead things, right? So a fly is a sign of death. So what he is doing is he is inquiring from Ba'al Zavuv, who apparently is a god of death, to find out, am I going to live or am I going to die? Good? Now, It's in all likelihood the real name of the subhuman the sun is not Baal-Zebub. And Kasuto makes this point. Actually, in Alex Israel's book on Kings 2, it's not published yet, but there are articles that you can find online if you spend a minute or two searching. Umberto Kasuto makes a point that perhaps the term Baal Zebub really was Baal Zevul. Zevul is one of the seven heavens, no? There's Rakia, there is Zevul, etc. There's Shrakim. There are different names of the heavens. Zevul is one of the heavens. So one could argue that the name of the idol actually was Baal Zevul, but we have a tradition which is actually a halacha. There's machlokes shach and taz in Yeridea, where this halacha applies in Chutz La'aretz to only in Eretz Yisrael, but there's a din that you're supposed to not call Avodah Zarah by their proper names. You're supposed to change the name of Avodah Zarah, no? One of the famous Avodah Zarahs in the Gemara is called Markulis. Tosfos points out that the name Markulis, Mar means a switch, and the real name of Avodah Zarah is Kilus. Kilus is an expression of praiseworthy. Kulis is an expression of we're changing the word praiseworthy to sound funny. Right? Now.
Like the use of the word Yashka again.
Right, we use Yashka again, even though Jesus is probably a proper name. Yeah. It's like calling someone Yanko, Lahavdo. But still, we try to distort names. So one could argue, says Kasuto, that the real name of the idol here was Baal Zevul, the master of heavens, but we change it to Baal Zevul in the Jewish tradition of changing the name of Avodah Zarah. Now,
plus getting that insulting implication.
Getting the insulting implication, all part of it. Now, Baal Zevul is the god of Ekron. What is Ekron? Ekron is a Philistine city, no? Ekron is a Philistine city. That means that what Ahaziyahu is doing is he's reaching out to the god of a different nation. And, right, this is already a problem that Eliyahu Hanavi is sent to address. Pasuk Gimel. Umalach Hashem diber el Eliyahu tishbi. Right, the angel of God speaks to Eliyahu. By the way, Rashi in Bechukosai points out that there are six times that Yaakov is spelled with an extra vav, right, and six times Eliyahu is spelled deficient, etc. So the Malach comes and speaks to Eliyah, and he says, "Kum alei lekrat malachei melech Shomron. Go greet the king of Shomron." Excuse me. Kum alei. I'm getting tired. Kum alei lekrat malachei melech Shomron. Go and meet the messengers of the king of Shomron. Vidaber aleihem hamibli ein Elohim b'Yisrael atem holchem lejosh bebaal zevuv Elohei Ekron. Right? The mussar that's given is, first of all, Eliyahu, meet the messengers and tell the messengers what? There are no gods among the Jews? You're going to some Philistine god? Right? The insult seems to be that they have to reach outside. Right? You have to go to some other god. Now, therefore, v'lachein, ko amar Hashem, Hamita asher alisa sham lo tered mimena ki mos tamus vayelech Eliyah. Right? Therefore, because you're going to this outside God, so therefore God says that the bed that you, Ahaziyahu, have gone on to, you're not going to get off of that bed, you're going to die. And Eliyahu goes. Well, the messengers return to Ahaziyahu, and they say, "Vayomer aleihem, maza shavtem." And he says, "Why did you go?" So now, what we have over here, you can follow along. This is actually a very interesting episode. What we have, is messengers who are sent to go to the Avodah Zarah. Eliyahu Hanavi intercepts them, as it were. Then those messengers go back to the king, right? And the king asks, why did you return? So they respond, well, someone went to meet us, and he told us, right, go back to the king and tell the king, so says God, what, there are no gods among the Jews? That you're going to inquire by Baal Zavod, therefore the bed that you're on, you're going to die, you're not going to go up a bed. Now, Alex Israel points out that if we compare Pasuk Vav to Pasuk Gimel and Dalet, we will notice two differences, which are actually suggestive. Hey, anyone want to try to do the close reading and notice the differences between Pasukim Gimel Dalet and Pasuk Vav? In Pasuk Gimel, the message that's given to Eliyahu, the Nevuah, is that Eliyahu should address the messengers, right? It's all in plural. V'daber aleihem, speak to the messengers. And tell the messengers, how come you're going to Baal Zavod? It does not say that that comes from God. The Ko Amar Hashem in Pasuk Dalet is only, God said, Achazyahu, you're on bed, you're going to die, right? Pasuk Vav, however, has everything in the name of Hashem, and instead of addressing the messengers, the address of this Nebuah is the king. Right? Remember, Pasuk Gimel Adad says Atem, right? And Pasuk Vav says that the bed that you went on, you're going to die. They are speaking to the king himself. They are not speaking to the messengers. Now, what's going on over here, Alex Israel develops the following theme. There is a large question throughout Sefer Melachim. Where is their loyalty? Is the loyalty to Hashem or is the loyalty to Avodah Zarah, right? It's a large question. Achav, the father of Achazyahu, literally was loyal to both. No? He's hedging his bets. That's why we saw that after the Har Carmel episode, Achav does some sort of tshuva, no? Achazyahu, however, is only loyal to Avodah Zarah. That makes him worse. But there's like a tug of war going on between Eliyahu and Achazyahu about the messengers. So the messengers are going to Avodah Zarah. Eliyahu intercepts these messengers. Eliyahu says, don't go to Avodah Zarah, go back. In other words, you messengers are not messengers of that king of Achazyahu to go to Avodah Zarah. You're messengers of me. I represent Hashem, and you go back to him. The tug of war is, who's in charge? And to prove this tug of war, so to speak, the messengers change the story. Right? In other words, the story that they give is not directed to the messengers themselves, it's directed to the king, in order to show, you know what, king, you're not really in charge. We messengers have now been taken over by Eliyahu. Okay. Let's go on. By the way, if you read this parak carefully, you'll notice that the word malach, which means messenger, keeps on repeating. The word shaliach keeps on repeating. There are, I believe, 6 repetitions of the verb form shaliach here. What that means is that there's a question, who's shaliach are you? Are you guys messengers of Achazyahu? But Eliyahu says, no, you're not. You're messengers of me representing Hashem. I'm going to send it right back. Okay. Now, when Achazyahu has the messengers come back, so he asks, Ma mishpat ha'ish, Pasuk Zayin, right? Vayidaber aleihem, Ma mishpat ha'ish asher lo yikratzchem. What's the story with this guy? Vayidaber aleihem es hadvarim ha'eila. And this guy who spoke those words to you. And they say, Vayomru Elan, the messengers say, Ish bal se'ar, ezar ar, azor b'masnav, Vayomar Eliyahu ha'tishkehu. This is the only physical description we have of Eliyahu. Okay, what does Eliyahu HaNavi look like? Right? Ish Ba'al Seyar. What does Ba'al Seyar mean?
Very
hairy. Ve'izar Ar.
He's got a cape.
I don't see the cape really. It doesn't say he has a cape, but it says he has a leather belt. No? Eliyahu HaNavi is very hairy, and he has a leather belt. Now, we're going to see that Eliyahu HaNavi also is going to be killing these messengers.
What's the significance of this?
Apparently, this is what Eliyahu HaNavi looked like. Everyone knew it.
Why do we need to know this?
So, I would tell you one of two things. Maybe this shows me that Eliyahu HaNavi is totally not interested in living among civilized people, which we know about him already. You see, usually, I get the impression, of like some bohemian. Like long, disheveled hair, a leather belt. You know, you get that impression. Right? You get the impression that that's what Eliyahu HaNavi is. He's not involved in society, in the world, which, by the way, is the mussar that Eliyahu received back when he brought the drought. Like, hey, recognize the suffering, right? Go understand what suffering is like. But maybe that's a sort of Eliyahu. Maybe Eliyahu is some sort of nazir.
Yeah.
Baal Se'ar, he has a lot of hair.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a nazir. I'm not sure. But apparently, by describing Eliyahu HaNavi, by describing this fellow as being very hairy with a leather belt, so the king knows right away, oh, that must be Eliyahu. Because that's his trademark.
Okay.
By the way, there are midrashim that say that the leather belt that Eliyahu HaNavi had came from the isle, the ram, that Avraham Avinu was makriv after Akedas Yitzchak. The Midrash says that every part of that ram was used. The horns, one of them is used for the shofar of Har Sinai. The other horn is to kav a shofar gadol. The horn that was used at Har Sinai was the left horn. The right horn was bigger. That's going to be the shofar gadol of Yemos HaMashiach. Every part of that ayel was used. Every part of that ram was used, including the leather of that ayel, which became Eliyahu's belt. Vladi? And Eliyahu will bring Mashiach, right? So there's some. So if we bring the whole ram back together. Right? That's interesting.
He's not a Bohemian.
What?
He's not a Bohemian.
He's not a Bohemian.
Why are we crazy
here? I don't know. Now, what Achaziyahu does, Pasuk Tes, is by Yishlach Elav Sar Chamishim V'Chamishav. He sends an officer of 50 people and the captain of that officer, and by Ya'aleilav, and he goes up to Eliyahu. V'hinei yoshev al rosh ha'har v'yidabar elav ish Elohim ha'melech diber reida. This fellow goes up to the mountain, he sees Eliyahu and he says, ish Elohim, man of God, king says, come down. Right? So he's speaking very forcefully to Eliyahu. So Eliyahu responds, and he speaks to the Sar HaMishim, and he says, "Im ish Elohim ani, tered esh min ha-shamayim, v'tochal otcha v'et chamishecha. If I'm a man of God, let a fire come down from heaven and consume you." And the fire comes down from heaven and consumes him. And then a second group of 50 people with the officer on top of them goes, and it speaks to him, "Ish Elohim, the king said, get down quickly." Now, unlike the first group, where they are not scared at all of Eliyahu, so they march up to the mountain. The second group doesn't march up. It doesn't say Vaya'al. It doesn't say he goes up to the mountain. It just says that they call out, King, right? Ish Elohim, right? Man of God, King says, come down quickly. Right? The first group says, just come down. Second group is saying, come down quickly. Eliyahu says, okay, Im Ish Elohim ani, if I'm really a man of God, let a fire come down and consume you. And the fire comes down and consumes him. By the way, when else do we have fires coming down and consuming people?
This week's parasha.
This is parasha, Korach. Right? There are two punishments to the people of Korach. There's the earth swallowing them up and the fire coming down and consuming them. Who else dies when a fire comes down and consumes them.
Oh, iron suns.
Iron suns, no, vanavihu. Again, what does this mean? You get the impression that people who don't accept authority get burned by fire. No? Aaron's sons did a number of sins. According to Chazal, one of the sins that they did is that they were Mora Halacha B'Shnei Rabbah. That they passed into question in the presence of Moshe Rabbeinu. Oh. Right? There are lots of sins that they potentially did. Midrashim, I have, I believe, 18 sins. I wrote a paper about this in my youth. The fact is that they disagree with authority. Korach's people disagreed with authority. No? They disagree with Moshe Rabbeinu. Oh, you disagree with authority. Fire comes down, consumes them. Eliyahu Hanavi is basically trying to show here, and that's the whole question, is your messenger of whom? Your messenger of me, of the king? Well, he shows them, listen, fire is going to come down and consume you because I'm proving that you are disagreeing with my authority. Right? That's the story there.
So the third group.
What?
The third group.
Third group. So then, Pasuk Gimel, they send a third group of 50 people and the officer, and this officer, Vaya'al Vayavosar Chamishim HaShlishi, he goes up on the mountain, but he's subdued, he is submissive. Vayichra al Birkav, he kneels down on his knees to Eliyahu. Vayitranen Elav, and he pleads with him, and he speaks to him. He says, Isha Elohim, Tikar na nafshi v'nefsha v'dacha ela chamishim beinecha. Have compassion on me. Right? Fire came down and consumed the first two groups, right? Now tikar nafshi beinecha, let my soul have some value. So then the Malach speaks to Eliyahu and says, go down with him. And he goes down and he goes to the king. And then Eliyahu confronts the king directly and he says, you know what, king, because you sent messengers to Baal Zavub, therefore the bid that you went on, you are not going to come off, because he's going to die. Now, effectively, this entire chapter leads in the direction that Eliyahu finally confronts the king. But first we have this whole weird confrontation with the messengers. It takes up a lot of time. The idea might be that we're trying to show, you know what, everyone is a messenger. But who are you a messenger of? So there's, like we pointed out, like a tug of war between Eliyahu and the king, etc. Now, Ahaziyahu dies, Ahaziyahu has no children, his brother Yehoram becomes the king, and everything is written in the book of Divrei HaYamim. So effectively what we have over here is just a major dispute about who is the king. If you want to just like see a few other points over here, the king, when he sends the messengers, he says, Lechu, go, right? That's Pasuk Beis. And then when Eliyahu sends them back, it's Lechu Shuvu. Right? Lechu Shuvu, go back. Right? In other words, the idea is Lechu means go out, go away. Lechu Shuvu means go back to the source. Go back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the idea that we're trying to emphasize.
Okay.
So let me just see if there's anything else that I missed that I was supposed to mention.
Okay.
Again, thank you for listening, and have a good night.